Hello and welcome to Armchair Detectives Wanted. This is episode 20, Just $2 More. The disappearance of the Millbrook twins. This is a case from the USA. Thank you for taking the time to listen. Before we start, I will just issue a warning. This podcast may include content that some could find upsetting. It may also contain offensive language. As with all these cases, they are real life events. So please be aware that the crimes have had an impact on the family and friends of the victim. This is the disappearance of sisters and twins, Danette Latonia Millbrook and Jeanette Latrice Millbrook. They were born on April the 2nd, 1974 in Augusta, Georgia, USA. They both vanished together on March the 18th, 1990, aged just 15. They have been missing for over 33 years. Within 1 year of the girls going missing, the case was closed by the police. The family had to work tirelessly to have the case reopened, which wasn't until 2013. The girls were last seen at the pump and shop at about 4:30 p.m. on the corner of 12th Street and Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. On that day, the girls walked to the local Presbyterian church on Laney Walker Boulevard. The pastor gave the girls some money to purchase food. They made their way to Church's Chicken on Milledgeville Road. They bought some food and returned home. While eating their meal, the girls told their mother that a man in a van had followed them on part of their journey home. That is the only information known about this male and van. Later that day, the girls walked to their godfather's address. He lived on Forest Street. They needed to borrow money for the school bus the following week. This was because the family had moved to a different location, so the girls now needed to take the bus to school rather than walk. The godfather provided them with $20 for their bus fare and $2 more for the girls to spend. On the way home, the girls called up their cousin's Juanita's home on Tincup Lane. While there, they asked if she could walk home with them. Juanita's mother said no, as it was too late in the day. They then called on Alejandra, their oldest sister. She was living on Pickett Avenue. They chatted with her for about 15 minutes. They also asked her to walk home with them, but she had recently given birth, so declined. It does seem strange that the girls asked a number of people to walk home with them. Were they worried? Did they feel vulnerable? At approximately 4:30 p.m, they attended the local gas station. This was on the corner of 12th Street and Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. They purchased chips, candy, and a soda. The cashier, Gloria, recalls the girls entering the shop. She is the last person to see the girls alive. When they left the store, Gloria said they appeared fine and their behaviour seemed normal. At the time they vanished, Jeanette was wearing a blue pullover shirt over a white turtleneck. She had on a brown skirt, white socks and white trainers. Danette was wearing a white shirt with a Mickey Mouse motif, white jeans and black shoes. Both of the girls had pierced ears and shoulder length hair. Each one had a scar near their navel due to an operation at birth. They are both described as good teenagers and neither had any history of absconding. They were students at Lucy Laney High School. As time progressed, their mother became increasingly worried. She spoke with their godfather, who confirmed they had left his address with the cash he had given them. She spoke with their sister, who confirmed she had also seen them. Their mother, Mary Louise Sturgis, decided to report the girls missing. However, she was told she must wait 24 hours before an official missing person report could be made. Only scant details are available of that initial police investigation. There is confusion and contradiction in the report from the police and the family. The police state the original investigation file has been lost. The family state the police informed them that the case was closed when the girls reached 17, as they could not legally be forced to return home. The police investigator states he was told by a juvenile case officer that the girls had been located. This meant they were removed from the National Register of Missing Children. The identity of that juvenile worker has never been disclosed. Some information suggested that the girls were making their way to Texas. However, they had no means to get there and no family in that part of the USA. It seems unbelievable that a case could be closed when two 15-year-old girls had vanished. how must you feel as a parent to know that the investigation to find your children has stopped? The family must have been heartbroken. But the family never gave up. They continued to request the police to investigate. In 2013, the case was finally reopened with a new intensity. Again, confusion hindered the investigation. Rumours circulated that the children had been removed from parental care. They had been placed in foster care later to be adopted. This was investigated only to find that it was a relative of the Millbrook twins that had children taken into care. The police did state, "We think a terrible injustice has been done for the last 20 years. Familial DNA was obtained from the family in 2017. However, as of now, a breakthrough has not been made." On January the 25th, 1993, an unidentified female body was found in Aiken County. It was thought that homicide had occurred sometime between 1990 and 1992. The skeletal remains were located near Shores Creek off Highway 191 in South Carolina. The family were convinced it was either Dennett or Janet. They believed the facial reconstruction resembled the twins. DNA was then compared to the Millbrook family and that of the female body. The result confirmed that it was not one of the twins. The father of the girls was John Millbrook. He showed no interest in the disappearance of the girls. In fact, he told their mother that if investigators wanted to speak with him, she should tell them he is dead. John Millbrook had been imprisoned for assisting in the disposal of a body. He was an acquaintance of Reggie Cummings and Ernest Vaughan's. Vaughan's had been convicted for the murder of Jermaine Burris and later Alfonso Williams. John Millbrook, the father of the twins, was found guilty of assisting Vaughan's in the disposal of the bodies. Vaughan's was due for parole after 22 years in custody. He said he could help with the Millbrook twins if he was given help with his parole hearing. He stated that as a 12-year-old, he was involved in drug dealing. Vaughan says that it was John Millbrook's address that he used as the base for the sale of drugs. He states that the girls came to their father's address where John Millbrook was present, along with a number of other people. He says the group were drinking alcohol and taking drugs, including the girls. He goes on to say, men started sexually assaulting one of the twins and the other girl stepped in to intervene. One of them dudes hit her. I guess she fell and she hit the table. That is, I think she bust her head open on the table. I don't think them girls alive after that. He names two people who were present by nickname only. These are Big Cheese and Little Cheese. He says he believes the bodies are at Merry Brothers Brickyard. This is about 1.5 miles from where they disappeared. Vaughan's has been interviewed by the police. His account, though, cannot be verified. In fact, police believe he is recollecting a completely different incident. In addition, he was also trying to improve his chances of parole. Another suspect was Joseph Patrick Washington. He is a convicted serial killer. He lived and worked in Augusta at a local brickyard. He lived on Hale Street, which meant he would travel on Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. This is where the pump and shop is located, and where the last sighting of the girls was made. He was a short, stocky male, approximately 5 foot tall. He was known to use three different vehicles. However, none of these were vans. He did, though, have access to a number of vehicles through his employment. He was employed as a driver at Merry Brothers Brickyard. In the early 1990s, he was actively attacking women. He also had preference for black women from teenagers to early 30s. The majority of his victims had short black hair. He would abduct the females and then take them to a separate location. He would rape them and then shoot them in the stomach. He was a very sadistic person. He would sometimes rape them after shooting them. Some that survived told how he would hold up his t-shirt with his teeth to ensure it wouldn't get covered in blood. He was sentenced to 17 consecutive life sentences in 1995. For abductions that occurred between 1991 and 1993. He told his victims he was committing the offences due to contracting HIV from an ex-girlfriend. He died in 1999 of an undisclosed illness. So as it stands today, this case remains unsolved. The family have had to fight over the years to get the authorities to investigate their disappearance. While grieving for their daughters, it must have been difficult to find the courage and strength to continually challenge for a full and detailed investigation. So now, it's over to you, the Armchair Detectives Wanted team. This is what we know. On the 18th of March 1990, they had visited a shop for food and told their mother they had been followed by a male in a van. They then collected cash from the home address of their godfather. On the way home, they called at the home address of their cousin, Juanita, and asked if she could walk home with them. A short while later, they went to their sister's address and asked if she would walk home with them. The last known sighting is at 4:30 p.m. on March the 18th, 1990. They were seen by the cashier at the Pump and Shop store. The store is situated on the corner of 12th Street and Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. After leaving that store, they vanished. And here's what we need to know. In which direction did the girls go when they left that store? Who was the man in the van that followed them earlier that day? Why did they ask their cousin to walk home with them? Why did they ask their sister to walk home with them? Was anyone in the store following them? Was there anyone in the car park waiting for them? How did a person manage to abduct two people? Did the girls get into a vehicle? Did they know the person that abducted them? Did the girls go to their father's address? While at their father's home, were they plied with drink and drugs? Were they victims of sexual assault? Did one of the sisters intervene? Was one of the sisters hit, which caused her to bang her head? Were both girls killed because of what had happened at their father's home? Why isn't their father interested in the disappearance of his daughters? Why did he say to their mother that if investigators wanted to speak with him, tell them he was dead? Did he know something about how they vanished without a trace? Was the father involved in their abduction and potential disposal? Is what Ernest Vaughan said true, or was he trying to improve his chances of parole? Are the girls buried at the Merry Brothers Brickyard? Should the brickyard and ponds be searched? Is Joseph Patrick Washington involved? He abducted girls similar in appearance to the Millbrook twins. He is a convicted serial killer. Why was the police investigation closed after 12 months? Why did the police feel they couldn't continue with the investigation once the girls reached 17? Who was the juvenile caseworker who said the girls had been found? How is it the girls were removed from the missing persons database without a physical sighting? Did they travel to Texas? Have they started a new life? Are they still alive? Have they been victims of murder? If they have been killed, where are their bodies? Where are their possessions? Where are their clothes? Someone has that vital piece of information. Someone knows what happened to them. Please visit our Facebook page, Armchair Detectives Wanted, where you'll be able to discuss your theories and views with other members. Don't forget, go to www.armchairdetectiveswanted.com, where you will find photos and further information about the case. This is week 20 of our scenario. This week we will summarise the evidence so far. Then, over the next 3 weeks, you will hear an account from all three suspects. You will then decide who you think is guilty. The deceased and her husband were having marital problems. They were also having financial difficulties. It appears the relationship was falling apart. The husband is interviewed and on legal advice makes no comment. He says he was out driving at the time of the murder. His fingerprints are on the knife, which is the murder weapon. Smith, the local resident, has been identified as being at the scene. His fingerprints are on the broken glass and lamp. Shoes recovered from his home address appear to match the impression from the rear garden. Witnesses confirm he was having an affair with the deceased. It appears Smith had recently become angry, as the deceased had threatened to tell his wife. He had a key to the house. Smith is interviewed and makes no comment. Jones is a local burglar. His vehicle is at the scene. He drives away as the police arrive. His hair has been found on the deceased. He has been interviewed and made no comment. Over the next 3 weeks, each suspect gives their account. Thank you for listening to Armchair Detectives Wanted. You are one of the team. Remember, don't just listen, be involved. We really would appreciate you recommending our podcast to others. We look forward to you joining us next week for episode 21, A Married Man.